Credit Hotline, 785-841-0102, Academy Cars.
907 at the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. It is now time for the Lawrence Business Magazine Show. Your host is Ann Frame Herzog.
Thank you, John. Each week we have in-depth conversations to follow up and explore the people and businesses making a positive impact on Lawrence. Today, I'm pleased to have Gregory Thomas. He's a design professor at KU and the director of the Center for Design Research at KU. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Ann, and hope to shed some light on some things for your listeners.
I do. When we had, in the last issue of the Lawrence Business Magazine, we did kind of a photo essay on the Center for Design Research, kind of the buildings up there, that old Chamney Barn and Farmhouse, which is, if anybody knows it, it's off of Bob Billings on, between Castle and Iowa, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the old stone building there, and that's the center for the Center of Design and Music, right?
The epicenter, yeah.
The epicenter. And but what I want to, before we kind of talk about that a little bit, exactly all the different things you're doing at the center itself, which I think is pretty exciting, I'd like to also talk about you yourself, how you got to Lawrence, kind of your background, because you've also now been appointed to the Chamber's Economic Development Council, which I think is very very smart. And I just want to talk a little bit about your background and how that really does tie into what they're doing at the Economic Development Council.
Well, I grew up in Wichita, which is interesting because I am traditionally a Kansas person. Left there to go to college at the university level at the Art Institute in Kansas City. And then, like a lot of other people, vowed never to return to the Midwest and spent most of my time on the East or West Coast, either in school or in the work experience. And then eventually, something brought me back here, as does a lot of people.
Same here. I came back.
Exactly. And I think in between there was a lot of things going on, and one of which was having my own design firm in Los Angeles for nearly 30 years. And the essence of that, and what our mandate was to provide for our clients, was what we call destination or place branding. Most everybody has heard or knows about what branding is, but destination branding is really getting people to understand and to value a place like Sydney, Australia. What makes Sydney interesting than other places? Well, it's not just some of the architecture of the opera house. It's the people. It's the quaint nature of the Australians. And those are the kinds of things that we pick up on and help share with people in North America so that they would want to go there instead of one of their usual vacations to Europe and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it's important, and it was also important in looking at this economic development job, which we'll talk about in a little bit, because it basically, I was thinking, well, if I can get people to go halfway around the world to Australia, maybe I should help them come to Lawrence as well.
To the exotic location of Lawrence, Kansas.
Yes, and that was actually a big factor in us accepting this position at the design department at KU. And moving here from 30 or 40 years in Los Angeles was the uniqueness of Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Being a university town, we've been to many of those. And, of course, the regular image that it comes up with is a lot of bars, mm-hmm. a lot of things that people can't avail themselves to. And I remember the first night we came for an interview or some part of that process, we were driving down New Hampshire, saw the Art Center. We didn't know what it was at that point, but there were a lot of people out in front with coats and ties, mm-hmm. and wine glasses, and we said, culture in Kansas.
Yeah, we actually had the Art Center, Susan Tate and John Bullock from the Art Center on last week. That's one of my favorite places, yes.
Well, and I think that was one of the really things that made it viable to consider as an alternative to where we were, is that there are things here in Lawrence that are wonderful, the size of the town, the uniqueness of it. And again, if we're on something like the economic development, we would hope to ensure that continues and grows and nurtures itself in the ways that we think it can. But going back to where
well,
the,
When did you move to Lawrence, and when did you?
Well, I sound like one of those pioneers now because I keep referring it to the summer of 2004.
2004, yeah. Oh, way back then. Okay.
And it was actually it was a consideration that we hadn't really given much thought in. We have a beautiful home, as we talked about earlier. It's still there, and we go back to it and check on it. Although there are people in it now, running from us, but we like the city. And it's nice to go back every once in a while just to get an infusion of other things, products. Being a designer, I'm interested in what's new, and usually it'll end up rolling out on either coast and spill towards the middle, although I think that's changing. Coming here was a big point in our lives because, put this in the best way I can, I'd done pretty much everything I thought I could do up until that point, but I had never structured a design department. Mm-hmm. And so that was a challenge that I wanted to accept. And so we basically packed up everything and moved here. And there was a pretty big cultural difference. But I think the nature of Lawrence and what it offers is that the fact that if you do get tired of the smallish kind of town, which it is expanding, mm-hmm. but it's still fits in within a certain category, you have the opportunity to go up to a metropolis and then within a 45-minute destination. So it can be the thing you want it to be.
Yeah, it's wonderful about that. Now, was your wife from Kansas, or where's she from?
No, actually, she's from Lebanon.
Oh, wow.
The country of Lebanon, not Lebanon, Pennsylvania, wherever that is. She's from the Middle East, so her perspective is, again,
totally
even
different.
Much
that's,
different
that's
than
wonderful.
Mine. Yes.
That's great having that kind of a international perspective when you're working, especially when you're yes. doing destination things, kind of getting somebody that has a whole different perspective on the United States.
Exactly. That's and how that segues into the Chamonix property, again, in that trip that we took for an interview, the interview process, obviously it was a very important trip, but one of the things we saw was this very dilapidated barn and house, part of the original Chamonix farm on Billings, as you mentioned. And I think the Landeen, as an incentive part of the deal, said maybe you could do something with this. And, you know, being from California, we call that a fixer-upper.
Yeah, definitely. And,
so, you know, despite the problems that there was wind blowing through it, big gust, and there were rats, and there was all kinds of other things. We had the vision to be able to think of what this place could eventually become. And what that place is, it's not just a physical place, although we have that in place now with the three buildings that are there. But it's really about a philosophy in terms of what universities and schools need to do nowadays. And that centers on having these innovative research centers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually ones that are structured with multidisciplined inputs, not just one aspect like design, but the CDR does have, in fact, now, resources from the entire university, which makes it unique.
It is interesting. Now, when you came here, was there actually a center for design research?
No,
there wasn't even.
No.
It was just you were going to be a design professor.
I was going to be the chair of the design department.
Okay, and that's all changed around too, hasn't it?
Yes, in 2009, the School of Fine Arts, which it was housed within, they disbanded that, and the professional practices, which I would classify as graphic design, industrial design, interior design, photography, all moved to the School of Architecture.
Okay.
So now it's the School of Architecture, Design, and Planning. Mm-hmm. The arts department, which is the traditional painting, sculpture, and so forth, moved to the College of Liberal Arts. And music, which was the third part of the School of Fine Arts, became its own school. So that's okay. The School of Music. So although design and art still, we still function out of the same building. We didn't move anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the classes are held where they were right
still
behind
Marvin Hall.
Right,
yeah.
Behind Marvin Hall. So it was just a structural thing. And, you know, I think at this point, after several years of that being in place, I think everybody feels comfortable with it and are managing very well. And so I think it probably was the right thing to do at that time.
So then how did this idea for the Center for Design Research come about? I mean, because it's a very progressive idea.
Well, there were models at that time of something similar to this. Probably the most infamous is the Institute for Design at Illinois Institute of Technology. Mm-hmm. And that's been there for a number of years. There's also a thing that your listeners might resonate to is Stanford D School.
Okay.
And then there's companies that came about called, one for instance called IDEO, that's IDEO, which everyone should look up and see what they do, because that in essence is what the CDR is modeled after.
Okay.
So in coming here, I did have a clear idea of what we wanted to do, and there were some prototypes out there that we wanted to not emulate. Obviously, we wanted to surpass them.
So but, this was kind of your mission when you got here.
I saw this farm as the vehicle to be able to do that. Of course, how many years later is that? it took a lot of discussion. And I think the first 5 years, it was really about seeing if that was going to be possible. And then in 2009, we met with Endowment, who basically owns the land, and we're after one of these 99 years for a dollar deal, where we'd be able to do the property, which we were, of course, very interested in seeing the long term view of this. Because if we were going to fix it up or do what we intended to do, we wanted to be sure we're going to be able to use it for that. But I think the model, as I said, was already out there. And we saw Kansas being a great opportunity for it. If you look at it strategically, there is no other place around that can offer this kind of thing. So from basically 2009, which was, again, the merger of design into the School of Architecture, that was pretty much the catalyst of
it. Okay, so things were changing, so I said, well, let's make this big change, too.
Yeah, the Endowment at that point also agreed, since they are the property owners, to help us renovate it. So that's where the iconic steel roof on the barn came from. Most of the exterior renovations the Endowment provided for us, which was, again, pretty much the catalyst for this thing to happen. And from then, from 2009 to today, it's just been on a very good fast track to have it evolve to where it is right now, which is basically all three buildings, two buildings being renovated, and one brand new building being built for it.
Well, we're going to get back. I want to talk more now when we get back after the break here about the center itself and all the initiatives and people you've brought into that.
Okay.
This is the Lawrence Business Magazine show on the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN.
Already seen today's high. That was at midnight, 75. Temperatures are now falling into the 40s. Our chance of showers and thunderstorms, then a chance of showers later in the day. Gusty northwest winds tonight, partly cloudy, down to 28. Tomorrow, mostly sun.
We need a state senator who will create jobs, like Republican Anthony Brown.
Paid for by Brown for State Senate, Dirk Lehman, Treasurer.
925 at the News and Talk of Lawrence, 1320 KLWN. Let's return to the Lawrence Business Magazine show. Once again, your host is Ann Frame Herzog.
Thank you. I'm here with Gregory Thomas, director of the Center for Design Research at KU. And we were talking about the center and how it came to be formed, and in 2009 is when it really got kicked off. And I want to talk about the center and all the different initiatives you have in there. But I also want to talk a little bit about, go back just for a little bit, back to the Chamber's Economic Development Council, because I think that ties into what you were saying about the destination, and I want to talk just a little bit more about that, and then I want to get back into the center.
Okay,
because
well,
I think it's really great that you're part of this this group.
Well, I again, when these type of things avail themselves, you want to make sure that you're somehow involved. I was involved in Los Angeles city politics for years when I was out there, and that's quite that's quite quite a job because you're dealing with millions and millions of people.
Yeah, that's not a little no, kind of city council.
Yeah, but you know, what I did do was work with my neighborhoods and mm-hmm. in regards to what I call responsible planning now, and that's just good planning. What's going to be for the good of the community and good for the developer, and everybody comes away happy. Mm-hmm. And so we practiced that for a long time when we were out there. We had Mayor Tom Bradley when he was around to help us on certain cases. And so it was a good time. And so I think between my background of being engaged in a civic way in that manner and understanding zoning and mm-hmm. and what it takes to make a city function well, plus the 30 some years of getting people to understand how and why my town is better than your town, it seemed kind of like a natural. And as I said, I've been quite impressed with Lawrence. We basically call it home now, which is something for my wife, as I said, to really make that statement. She didn't want to let go for a long time, but I think it has all the possibilities of being one of the greats. It also, with that comes the possibility that some things might not be great. And so I think if I can help to contribute to that, I wanted to. So that when I heard about this, I was very interested, and fortunately it came out the way it did, where I was one of the people that they've selected. And
no, what is the Chamber's Economic Development Council? What is your guys' mission there? What is the charge?
Well, we have yet to meet.
Okay.
I think that's next
okay.
month.
So you're going to get your savers in charge.
I think in terms of economic development, you mentioned economic development in regards to any city. You're talking about revenue and mm-hmm. bringing revenue in and things that will help the city sustain itself. But with that, when you build something up that has that much kind of cachet to it, then that also is going to help tourism. It's going to help the university, which mm-hmm. is a partner in I think the city, which again is my interest too. And how do you bring these two together?
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting too, because we were talking about this earlier, how the city and the university are really trying to really create some initiatives before they're really working together, because it is to everyone's best interest for the healthier the city is, the healthier the university, and vice versa.
Right, and after the country, since I've moved here, I still practice some cult consulting, and we've done cities here in North America, such as Astoria, Washington, and probably one of the largest ones was Durham, North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Duke University plays a huge part in the city's well-being. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of committee meetings. I think when we were going through a branding process for Duke, for Durham, there were like five different focus groups of 20 people each. And you all had to get their input, and you all had to make sure that you were on target with them, the final delivery, which we were. So I think it's those kind of things that I'm hopefully going to be able to bring to this board.
Wonderful. So now that then ties into some of the things that you're doing, the center too. You guys, so in 2009, you really got kicked off here.
It didn't get launched. Catapulted
but
that quick.
But you I mean, knew it was going to. You things, knew it was actually going to happen then
yeah,
at that point.
there were eyes on it. They were okays. Like I said, the endowment really became a partner in helping us getting some of the needed repair work done to the exteriors of the building. And you know, we've been on that course since then. In 2010 through 2011. Our fifth-year architecture students in what is called Studio 804, which is actually where they design and build a structure, did the white building, which we, of course, refer to as the 804 building. Uh-huh. It's the newest building there in between the barn and the farmhouse. And it is, I can say without reservation, one of the most sustainable buildings in the United States. It has everything we would ever want to research with, such as solar panels, wind turbine, electroplated windows that we can modulate their density or how bright or not the sunlight comes in. So It's really a small laboratory as well, but we use it for conferences and so forth.
One of the things that there are, it's quite a beautiful building. If you haven't had a chance, if you get the business magazine, it has some photos in there, but you can also go online and check it out too. It's really quite a pretty place.
Yes, and I need to mention to your listeners too that the CDR is actually open for visits. We kind of have to be careful that we don't do it every day, but when we get a group of people together, whatever, we do provide it as a tour, and that was a concept from the very beginning that we wanted to keep. There's no sense in building a building like this that's highly illustrates the sustainability factor, and then not let anybody in it.
Yeah.
So
it's a secret. You can't let.
Yeah, I mean that has happened in other cities, mm-hmm. but we want to make sure that people understand what wind turbine technology can do for you. What the smart meter. Since Westar was actually the catalyst for this by helping us in putting the smart meter in the building.
Okay.
And so it's pretty mm-hmm. high tech, and you know, people can get a hold of me and ask for a group
presentation. You also have a wall there that's all a living wall, which
is
kind of fascinating.
It is living, thank God, and it's it's 40 feet long. Has about 10,000 ferns in it. They were all placed there by the students who built the structure. There's 10,000 plants, 14 varieties of ferns, and it's pretty big. And when they first approached me with the idea, I thought, are you kidding? I can't even get my house plant to live. And yet,
I would not be in charge of the wall either.
No, but we have people that tend to it, and it's thriving, and it is the e-ticket whenever you come into the building.
Okay.
But I think we're finished building. I mean, there's still certain things we have to do in the farmhouse and the barn. But the idea behind this, again, is really to cultivate projects that are done in collaboration with industry. Mm-hmm. The mission of the CDR is develop and research and develop new products and services. And it's pretty short, but it can also be pretty encompassing. What does that mean? Well, what we like to do is go out and look for projects that would be of interest to our students and the university, and then assign faculties and classes and students that would best be able to resolve some of the questions that these projects pose. So with the building pretty much done, my job, which the next phase of my job was to go get these things. So I've been very active over the last, I don't know how many years, in lining up these potential projects. We did one for Ford last.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and that was just, it's my badgering them to let us do a project. And
good.
It worked. And so we were a little nervous because that was, we were told from the beginning that they only use MIT and Michigan. And so finally we're in that mix as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah,
congratulations. That is wonderful.
Yeah, and the students did such a terrific job on it. They have invited us back to do a more official program for the spring of 2013, which will be actually designing a part in the car that you use for driving. Can't get any more specific than that, but
well,
it is a real project.
That's pretty significant. That's,
yeah, well, and this year, right now, what we're doing is working on a project for Bayer Health mm-hmm. in designing the next generation glucose testing device.
Okay.
So those people with type 2 or type 1 diabetes will have new devices, new tools, new ways of monitoring the disease. And, obviously the outcome is we want to provide something for Bayer that will not only be a tool to check yourself, but also to create a different lifestyle for you that might even prevent some of this from getting in a larger degree of seriousness.
Wow, that's amazing. So how do these things? Because you know, when you think of because you're in the School of Architecture, and then you're talking about designing devices and things for cars. I guess that's something I just never made that leap. I guess because the school is so encompassing, it's a whole design school.
Well, I think the word design is really important because mm-hmm. architects or designers, design covers a broad range of people. Engineers or designer, anybody that creates anything,
mm-hmm.
I would want to put that label to, even you, doing what you're doing here, are a designer. And so I think that it just gets rid of a lot of barriers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the unique part of this interdisciplinary nature of these things is at the CDR, is that we will have industrial design students who are product designers sitting right next to engineers, either mechanical or electrical. And in fact, in the Bayer class, we have an anthropologist. So it's those kind of combinations mm-hmm. that industry wants. They use. So what we're trying to do now is get our students able to make that first leap out of college when they graduate directly into the workforce. And today it's even harder than it was, because a lot of people who have prior work experience but not perhaps a college education are in some cases now getting the jobs prior to our students. We want to be able to offer them the work experience and the mm-hmm. education to be really competitive in that job market when they get out of here. So if we can have a student put on their resume that they worked on a project for Ford while still in school, I mean, how advantageous is
right.
that?
Now, are these, when the students are working on these, are these freshmen, sophomores, there's usually the upperclassmen, the juniors and seniors?
It's usually upper class people, yeah, mm-hmm. because we have those first couple of years as freshmen and sophomore and somewhat first year junior mm-hmm. where they're having to learn some of the basic things. But we need to do this, and we are doing it because, I've been around a long time, as I mentioned, I've been through a lot of schools myself, both on the receiving and then on the giving end. And, the nature of things now is we really can't teach, my belief is, we really can't teach verbatim the kinds of things that I was taught mm-hmm. because that world doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
We have to start this transformation into mm-hmm. other areas and make sure that the students get this well-rounded, I say that in a very big way, education into other things, mm-hmm. whether it's if you're a designer, you need to be working in 3D, you need to be working with engineers. Everybody has a skill that they're able to bring to the table. And that's what we want to have happen at the CDR, where we get a big table mm-hmm. with a lot of these people with different attributes that just enhance the product. Because, if you get a bunch of people together that all have the same thinking, you're not going to get very much out of it.
It narrows the field, definitely.
It does, yeah.
Well, when you get this, so I think this is interesting. So you have your regular classes, and then are these, kind of, when they're working on these projects, do people have in these classes, do they have to kind of say, apply to work on the different projects? I mean,
right.
That seems like kind of a special.
Yeah, thing. What is happening now is I have to get these projects in order probably a semester in advance. Mm-hmm. Like this summer, we learned from Ford that they do want us to do another project. So we spent all this semester figuring out what that was. Well, they actually figured it out and they told us.
Defining the project,
how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And then my job at this point is pretty much what it's supposed to be, is finding out who are the right people to be involved in this. Mm-hmm. Since we know the nature of what the device is that they're going to want, that would help. That helps us narrow it down to a specific group or mm-hmm. a specific area within engineering, a specific area within design. So we basically tailor it. We get the faculty lined up, and then we promote it. Which when the students are starting to think about what they're going to take for next term, they're able to intelligently put it down and have a knowledge of what it is they're going to be doing. So we're right on schedule, and things are happening right now. And I think it's great too, because as you know, and maybe your listeners are aware of, the university is changing. Mm-hmm. dramatically too, and we have a new mission that's called Bold Aspirations, and I think that it's terrific because it's really giving us a direction for which the university should look at and aspire to, and a lot of the things that we're doing are part of that aspiration, and it's going to make for a better university. It's going to make for better schools. It's just everything. I guess you could say that old slogan that everything is falling in place mm-hmm. or everything is just at the right time.
That's great. Now, when you have these classes, how many students are participating? And you have your Ford project. You have obviously more than one project going on at a time, right? So your Ford project, how many students are going to be part of that project?
Well, the Ford project, we have about 10 students now, okay. Which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's kind of where we want to be because it's really kind of manageable.
And they're really involved in it.
Oh, very much. I've had are very passionate. And I don't want to imply that this is the first project the CDR has done. We've done projects before without the buildings on campus. We've done some interesting projects for Bushnell, for Nokia, in terms of designing telephones for a specific market. We've done a project for Herman Miller, which is a large furniture company. Mm-hmm. So this is just seems new because it's all falling under this one complex now. But we're going to be running a number of projects in tandem. And I guess I want to explain exactly what the function of the three buildings are. The original farmhouse, which belonged to the Harold Chamney's son, who worked the farm, is across the street and the one that is still there. We have renovated the inside. And that house is going to be used for faculty and graduate students who okay. are in charge of the specific projects that we have running at the CDR.
Okay.
The new building, which is designed by the 804, designed and built by the 804 students, is mainly is the hub of the center, mm-hmm. and we meet there for conferences and classrooms and just general meeting space, but it's also a laboratory that was also the one of the mandates given to the architecture okay. students that. It has to continue to be a facility where professors or grad students on campus can go to and do small research projects because we have the wind, we have the solar panels, and also I need to mention that we have the first electric vehicle charging station in the state of Kansas
Great.
So, and it's free for anybody who's thinking about contemplating about buying an electric vehicle. You can charge it there all you want because we make the energy there.
Oh, that's fascinating. So when you're talking about doing research there, it's good because you have all these other disciplines and things, all these things are available there.
Exactly.
So you
yes.
can bring in all the engineering, architecture, design, yep. every element's all.
And the more diverse the mixture, the better the product's going to be that we come out with. I mean, there's so many things that affect our lives today in terms of technology or devices. I mean, one only has to look at the TV for 5 seconds, and they'll see that the car is no longer about the engine and the powertrain. It's about the ambient music and the sound system that it has. And I think that's what's important for our students, just to know specifically with Ford, we are going to be talking to another car company, that the car is evolving into something quite different than it used to be. It has a computer on board. Mm-hmm. That computer is used to make the car function in the way you would want it to. But there's things that are happening with it that are so far out there, and I think your listeners would be interested in this. Ford, which is obviously the people that we have been dealing with, has a driver's seat that is embedded with sensors that can actually forecast an oncoming heart attack.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it also at the same time has the ability through the dashboard can do facial recognition and actually tell you if you're an epileptic that you're probably going to have a seizure in the next 45 minutes. So you're able to pull over or seek some medical help. But I think that's what's interesting for us. And this is a whole new era of design and discovery.
That's fascinating and creepy at the same time.
Well,
that's a lot. That's kind of big brotherish in some ways.
If you're not epileptic, it might be creepy. Yeah.
No, I mean, to be allowing epileptics to drive, but just the kind of the car knowing so much is kind of.
But I think the shift is going from it'll always be. I don't think it's a shift, but it'll always be about the entertainment systems. Mm-hmm. But also that what those are going to do are they're going to make the driving process more complex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to be looking at your dash or your console to see who tunes you've downloaded.
Right.
Whereas, that's a 3-second blackout period, basically. You're
right,
not looking
yeah.
at the road. So all those things We have to counter that with things that are going to make sure that you don't be distracted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things that are coming in terms of voice recognition, where you won't have to take your hands off the wheel. You know, things that just let you focus more on what your task is, which is to get from A to B without any accidents. So we're looking at a lot of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
So it's an interesting time. Interesting is probably not the best word. It's a fabulous time for designers and students in school, because it's the convergence of all these technologies and tools that are able to create something that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I'm obviously a big promoter of design and the aesthetics of things, but the functional design is so amazing, you know, how that has evolved from over just the last 10 years, last 5 years, just how things have changed.
Well, and it's, you know, what we have found very early on is that I like gadgets. I have a ton of gadgets at home and, you know, probably buy more than I should. But
it's research, so you need to, right?
Oh, yeah, I wish the federal government would understand that when I do my taxes. But I think what we have found very early on is that a lot of people like things that will make their life easier. But if they have to sit down and program it to do that, they're mm-hmm. not going to do it.
Yeah.
So big emphasis on what we're looking at right now is a seamless transition that you can buy a device and within a couple of seconds it'll understand what you want and then help you do those things in the whenever you need it.
Now I want to talk a little bit about how you come back and just a little bit how you monetize some of these things.
Stipends?
Yeah.
And we'll continue with the Lawrence Business Magazine show right here on 1320 KLWN.
Stoneback Appliance sees generation after generation where you get treated like family, and they go the extra mile to help you.
From the 1320 KLWN Weather Center, I'm meteorologist John Weatherby.
9:51 at 1320 KLWN. Let's continue with the Lawrence Business Magazine show, and once again, Anne Frame Herzog.
I'm here with Gregory Thomas, from the director of the Center for Design Research at KU. We're going to talk a little bit more about that, but first I want to let our listeners know that the Lawrence Business Magazine is published quarterly and available at our local Hy-Vees, the Merck, and other convenient merchants around town. It's also available at lawrencebusinessmagazine.com, and there you can find out about our next guests on the radio show and submit questions at questions@lawrencebusinessmagazine.com or like us on Facebook, where you can find out updates, information on the radio show and magazine. We'd love to get your comments and questions, but in our effort to encourage an open dialogue, we ask that you put your name on it. Well, before the break, we were talking about the center, and we were talking about in the magazine, we have these pictures of the center and the three buildings, because it's really quite beautiful, and the 804 building is that's so sustainable. You really can't see from the road. You can see part of it, and it's pretty. But until you kind of see it from the other side, you don't realize kind of how modern and how big it is. Actually, you're kind of surprised at the size of it myself. But in that, you said that a lot of the funding came from the Endowment Association for that. So the last few minutes, I'd just like to talk a little bit about when you're working with these companies and you're providing them this wonderful service. How does the economics of that situation work a little bit?
Well, first I have to clarify that the endowment owns the property in which these three buildings are on, and they did give an initial amount of money for us to renovate the roofs and the windows and basically seal the buildings so that we were able to work in them. The funding for the 804 project came from various sources that the dean and I solicited within a short amount of time, one of which was the Transportation Research Institute that we have here on campus, which is a phenomenal resource for us to have. And the rest of it, quite frankly, was donations. Donations mm-hmm. by corporations to put their technology in this building for us to test it and so forth.
Okay.
So
like Westar and stuff like that.
Exactly.
About.
Westar, Honeywell, all Johnson Control. A lot of them either gave us stuff free or at family rates. So the building cost us in terms of raw supplies, cement and so forth. So we were very lucky. And that's, again, the nature of this, the way that the 804 class performs. Now, what that's supposed to do, what the CDR is supposed to do in terms of financials, well, that was the whole point. And I guess the Economic Development Council and this and the CDR overlap because it's all about developing revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think what's happening now is, and why we feel we're so much a part of the Bold Aspirations plan for the university, is that universities don't get much funding. And, you know, the, even though we mentioned that that we're a state university, that the amount we get from the state is very little.
And decreasing.
And, yeah, even more. So we're looking at different ways to subsidize that. And mm-hmm. and this model of industry and university intelligence being combined is growing very quickly. I mean, there's so many, as I mentioned, there were probably three or four at the most type centers around when I came. Now there's two handfuls. I mean,
okay.
Virginia Commonwealth, as I mentioned, Stanford. Everybody seems to be doing that. And again, it's a resource for the university and for the schools that are within it. Now we, depending on the project, it's basically it's a combination of money and goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
I can honestly say that Bayer Health was a very good sponsor, and they do provide funding for us to do this research, as do many other resource organizations. And out of that, they will be able to understand what our opinion of them and where they should be in the near future. So we're giving them a lot of information for a stipend to be able to do that. Ford is not giving us that kind of stipend, but instead they're giving us the potential, not the potential, they will be sending down Ford engineers to actually conduct some of the classes.
Mm-hmm.
We're expecting I forget the terminology for it, but it's basically a whole dashboard of a new 2013 Ford vehicle that will go into the barn, and we'll be able to study that, sit at it, do the kind of research that would help us in terms of making it out of cardboard like we usually would do.
Okay.
So again, you know, that is valuable. The alliance with
simulator,
Ford.
A simulator, so to speak.
It would be. It will be a simulator. And so it varies per industry, but the idea is that, yes, we do. We would like funding for the project if it's appropriate. If I think that there are things that we're going to learn way, way above what that mm-hmm. was going to cost, then of course we want to be engaged with that, such as Ford.
Sure.
But the CDR does not receive any money from anybody, any other sources. We don't get funding from the university. We don't get it basically from the school unless I ask my dean for some things to improve it.
Special.
And we get it, but
okay. But
we have to become at a level where we are able to self-sustain it, and in doing
amazing.
So, mm-hmm. be able to in turn give that money, additional funding, back to the university as well.
Now, when your students graduate from these positions, are some of these companies hiring them, or are they going to? Are they just going to be able to go out in the world? I mean, how does your relationship with these companies work then? And for the
Well, that's actually in my pitch to the companies. That is one of the paramount reasons that they should become engaged with us. The companies have the opportunity to be the minimum we require from the company is that you be there for the initial kickoff of the project. You're there for midterm to sort of evaluate where we stand at the midterm. And then you're definitely there for the final, because that's when the students show all the bells and whistles and mm-hmm. and everything. So, but you can come more than you would like to, or less than you would like to. But we really encourage those three visits. And so I think what that has done in the past is be able to avoid to provide the potential employer, and that is a whole part of this as well, is they get to go in and they see which students they want to hire.
Mm-hmm.
So we had done this at a school that I was at prior to coming to KU, which was USC, our famous Trojans in Southern California, and another school called Art Center, where actually we had probably 95% of the students had jobs prior to graduation.
That's a good
because of these type projects. So So the employer actually gets to see the students at work. They get to hear how they present. They get to understand their creativity and their business sense. And so it's better than a resume, which is just cold and a piece of paper. You get to know who this person is. And as a former employer, that's what I want to know first.
Yeah, you know, who's gonna get the job done for you
exactly.
And grow with your company.
Exactly.
Well, Greg, this has been a very interesting, informative hour. Our listeners can get links to your site and from our magazine online at lawrencebusinessmagazine.com. The Lawrence Business Magazine. .com and like us on Facebook for updates. Each Thursday at 9 a.m., we have in-depth conversations to follow up and explore the people and businesses making a positive impact on Lawrence. So thank you very much for being here. I think that some great stuff you guys are doing up there at the center. That's and just so many possibilities. It's very exciting.
Okay. Thank you, Ann. Thank you.
And what we're going to do is you can also, the Lawrence Business Magazine, it's every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. here on KLWN 1320, Redefining the Concept of Business.
This is 1320 KLWN Lawrence.
I'm County Commissioner Nancy Thelman. I represent not just Lawrence, but Baldwin City, Vinland, Eudora, and Lecompton, too. I started programs for our rural towns at